My Life with Gastroparesis by Thomas Rivera Lai. From the editor, in the summer 2008 edition of Voice of the Diabetic, Tom Lai shared his personal experience with discovering that he had gastroparesis and learning how to address the disorder. Statistics show that diabetics suffer disproportionately from this potentially debilitating disorder. While the following account is graphic, Tom's description may help those stumped by what can appear to be a medical mystery find resolution to their problem. Here is what he says. If you have had diabetes for many years and experience unexplained bouts of severe vomiting and diarrhea from time to time, you may have a moderate form of diabetic gastroparesis. I suffered from these puzzling and completely debilitating episodes for more than 6 years before I was diagnosed with diabetic gastroparesis. The advice I finally received from a digestive system specialist at Johns Hopkins University Hospital in Baltimore was a true godsend for me and my family. I have been free from symptoms for over 5 years now. If you, a loved one, or a patient of yours suffers similar symptoms, I hope the advice I pass along here will help. It has changed my life. My first episode. I first began experiencing bouts of severe vomiting and diarrhea in 1994, about 2 decades after my diagnosis of type 1 diabetes. During my first episode, I thought I had stomach flu, although the symptoms began quite suddenly and I did not have the telltale fever and body aches. It began with a full feeling in my stomach and the onset of frequent, bad-tasting, and bad-smelling burps. Over several hours, the burps continued and became more frequent. Nausea grew and the worst vomiting of my life began. I was hesitant to leave the bathroom because, even after vomiting, the nausea didn't stop. I was vomiting several times an hour. Then my intestines began to rumble in a most extraordinary fashion, followed by, you guessed it, the worst diarrhea I had ever known. The combination of vomiting and severe diarrhea, often occurring simultaneously, went on for 6 or 8 hours or more before I started to feel some relief. My first hospitalization. During this first episode, I was admitted to the hospital through the emergency room because of dehydration. The doctors put me on intravenous fluids and began searching for the bacteria or virus that was causing my sudden and dramatic symptoms. I had a working kidney transplant, so the doctors left no stone unturned in their search. They ordered a dose of intravenous antibiotics and had every possible body fluid cultured. In the end, they found nothing. Once the symptoms slowed down and I was rehydrated, I actually felt fine again. The pattern begins. I discounted the first episode as just one of those things, but when I had another one about 6 months later, I began wondering what was at the root of this problem. Over the next 5 or 6 years, I got sick like that 2 or 3 times a year. If more than 6 months passed without an episode, hope would kindle in our hearts that it, whatever it was gone. It always came back. Sometimes the episodes were so severe that I would get dehydrated to the point of passing out while vomiting. I recall one episode while visiting friends in New Jersey for a birthday party. Near the end of the party, the burps began, and 6 hours later, after I had taken over the guest bathroom at my friend's home, my wife Eileen found me passed out on the floor near the toilet. They called an ambulance, but in the end, the New Jersey doctors had no more clue than the doctors at home. The impact on my life. I cannot describe how stressful life was during these years. Every time I burped, I would feel anxious. Was it starting again? I dreaded sensing the awful taste and smell of a burp, which inevitably meant I was about to go through another 12 hours of the worst vomiting and diarrhea one can imagine. Eileen suffered the same stress each time she heard me burp. Traveling was especially stressful. If I burped when about to board a cross-country flight, my stress level soared. The other aspect was the unpredictable nature of each episode. 1 minute I was having a great time, and the next minute I was preparing for a possible visit to the hospital from dehydration. One episode even interrupted our honeymoon. Avoiding a trip to the hospital was the only consolation I drew from that occasion. I was helpless to do anything once it started, and having no clue how to prevent it left me horribly frustrated. The search for a diagnosis. My primary care doctor referred me to a gastroenterologist who ordered a gastric emptying study since he suspected diabetic gastroparesis. All 3 gastric emptying studies I underwent over 5 years showed my stomach moved the food along just fine. In a gastric emptying study, one fasts for half a day to make sure the stomach is completely empty, then eats a cup of food laced with a small amount of radioactive material. The doctors then take pictures of the food as it passes through the digestive system over the next 2 or 3 hours. In light of a normal gastric emptying study, one doctor suggested I had a nervous stomach. We noticed episodes often occurred around holidays, and we started to track what I ate to see if the symptoms were an allergic reaction to holiday food. After each episode, we tried to think of what I had recently eaten, but no specific food emerged as the trigger. The list of suspected foods, everything from salad, eggs, wine, and champagne, to salmon and fruit, was long, but in the end, none was what I sought, the trigger food to avoid so that my symptoms would go away. The specialist saves the day. After my third gastroenterologist received another normal gastric emptying study result, he referred me to a specialist in digestive disorders at Johns Hopkins University Hospital. After hearing my history, the specialist examined that more moderate forms of gastroparesis can be difficult to diagnose. In what he referred to as episodic diabetic gastroparesic, the stomach digests food normally in most circumstances. But combinations of stress or excitement with larger amounts of hard-to-digest foods can make a diabetic stomach grind to a halt. His explanation made sense. My stomach would empty normally during a gastric emptying study because I had to fast before the test and consume only a small portion of food during the test. During holidays, I not only ate much more, but I ate lots of high-fat foods and had the stress or excitement of the holidays with which to contend. And of course, our honeymoon was filled with excitement and all manner of food. I did not receive a strict diet to follow. Rather, the doctor educated me on the types of foods that could be problematic and told me to be aware of how often and in which quantities I ate them. I received this advice and started following it about 7 years ago. I have had just one incident since then, in 2003, but nothing since. In my last episode, I was on an exciting vacation in Lake Tahoe, California, and I had a high-fat Mexican food meal and a large fried chicken dinner the night before. I learned my lesson.